but some wounds take longer to heal than others. He didn't know any more than you do. How long have you been a werewolf?
2 months, Max said, leaning his head back against the tool chest and looking at the ceiling. You killed my girlfriend, but I survived. Sort of.
He was lucky, I thought, remembering the suppositions I'd had while overhearing his phone call earlier. He hadn't killed his girlfriend after all. He probably wasn't feeling lucky, though, and I wasn't going to tell him that it could be worse.
Tell me about your life afterward. Where did those men come from? Are you from the Tri-Cities?
I hadn't heard of any suspicious deaths or disappearances in the last 6 months.
He shook his head. I'm from Naperville.
At my blank look, he clarified.
Illinois, near Chicago.
He glanced at the body, closed his eyes, and swallowed.
I want to eat him, he whispered.
Perfectly natural, I told him, though I have to admit I wanted to move away from him. Heaven save me, stuck with a new werewolf in a garage with fresh meat was not anyone's idea of safe. But we had to wait here until Adam came. It could have been worse. It could have been nearer the full moon, or he could have been as hungry as he'd been that first day.
Deer not only tastes better, it's easier to live with afterward, I said.
Then reflected that it might be better to talk about something other than food.
What happened to you after that first attack? Did someone take you to a hospital?
He looked at me a moment, but I couldn't tell what he was thinking.
He said, After the attack, I woke up in a cage in someone's basement. There was someone in the room, and when I opened my eyes, he said, Good, you'll live. Leo will be happy to see it.
Wait, I said. Leo, Chicago. Then it came to me. Leo James? Looks as though he ought to be a Nordic skiing champion, tall, long, and blonde.
Leo was one of the Chicago alphas. There were two of them.
Leo held territory in the western suburbs. I'd met him once or twice. Neither of us had been impressed, but then, as I said, most werewolves don't take kindly to other predators.
Mac nodded. That sounds right. He came down the stairs with the first guy and another man. None of them would talk to me or answer any of my questions.
He swallowed and gave me an anxious glance.
This shit just sounds so weird, you know? Unbelievable.
You're talking to someone who can turn into a coyote, I told him gently. Just tell me what you think happened.
All right, he nodded slowly. All right. I was still weak and confused, but it sounded like Leo was arguing money with the third guy. It sounded to me like he sold me for $12,000.
Leo sold you for $12,000, I said, as much to myself as to Mac. My voice might have been matter of fact, but only because Mac was right. It was unbelievable. Not that I thought he was lying.
He had one of his wolves attack you and your girlfriend, and when you survived, he sold you to someone else as a newly turned werewolf.
I think so, said Mac. You called your family this afternoon? I asked. I smiled at his wary look.
I have pretty good hearing. My brother, his cell phone.
He swallowed.
It's broken. No caller ID. I had to let them know I was alive. I guess the police think I killed Meg.
You told him you were after her killer, I said. He gave an unhappy laugh.
Like I could find him.
He could. It was all a matter of learning to use his new senses. But I wasn't going to tell him that. Not yet. If Mac did find his attacker, chances were Mac would die. A new werewolf just doesn't stand a chance against the older ones. I patted his knee.
Don't worry. As soon as we get word to the right people, and Adam is the right people, Leo's a walking dead man. The Maroc won't allow an alpha who is creating progeny and selling them for money.
The Maroc? Sorry, I said. Like I told you, except for the occasional rogue, werewolves are organized into packs under an alpha wolf. It used to be that was as organized as werewolves got. But the only thing it takes to be alpha is power, not intelligence or even common sense. In the Middle Ages, after the Black Plague, the werewolf population was almost wiped out, along with real wolves, because some of the alphas were indiscreet. It was decided then that there would be a leader over all the werewolves,
In the U.S., all the packs follow the Marak, a title taken from the name of one of King Arthur's knights who was a werewolf. The Marak and his pack have oversight of all the werewolves in North America.
There are more of us? He asked.
I nodded. Maybe as many as 2,000 in the U.S., 500 or 600 in Canada, and about 400 in Mexico.
How do you know so much about werewolves?
I was raised by them. I waited for him to ask me why, but his attention had drifted toward the body. He inhaled deeply and gave an eager shudder.
Do you know what they wanted with you?
I asked hurriedly.
They told me they were looking for a cure. Kept putting things in my food. I could smell them, but I was hungry, so I ate anyway. Sometimes they'd give me shots, and once, when I wouldn't cooperate, they used a dart gun.
Outside, when you were talking to them, you said they had others like you? He nodded.
They kept me in a cage in a semi-trailer. There were 4 cages in it. At first there were 3 of us, a girl around my age and a man. The girl was pretty much out of it. She just stared and rocked back and forth. The man couldn't speak any English. It sounded like Polish to me, but it could have been Russian or something. One of the times I was taking a trip on something they pumped in me, I woke up, and I was alone.
Drugs don't work on werewolves, I told him. Your metabolism is too high.
These did, he said.
I nodded. I believe you, but they shouldn't have. You escaped?
I managed to change while they were trying to give me something else. I don't remember much about it other than running.
Was the trailer here in the Tri-Cities? I asked. He nodded.
I couldn't find it again, though. I don't remember everything that happens when...
His voice trailed off. When you're the wolf. Memory came with experience and control, or so I'd been told. A strange car approached the garage with a quiet purr common to expensive engines.
What's wrong? He asked when I stood up.
Don't you hear the car? He started to shake his head, but then paused.
Yes, I do.
There are advantages to being a werewolf, I said. One of them is being able to hear and smell better than the average Joe. I stood up. It's turning into the parking lot. I'm going to look out and see who it is.
Maybe it's the guy you called, the Alpha.
I shook my head. It's not his car. Chapter 3 I slipped through the office and opened the outside door cautiously, but the smell of perfume and herbs hanging in the night air told me we were still all right. A dark Cadillac was stretched across the pavement just beyond Stefan's bus. I pushed the door all the way open as the uniformed chauffeur tipped his hat to me, then opened the car's back door, revealing an elderly woman. I stuck my head back in the office and called,
It's all right, Mac. Just a cleanup crew.
Keeping the humans ignorant of the magic that lives among them is a specialized and lucrative business, and Adam's pack kept the best witch in the Pacific Northwest on retainer. Rumors of Elizaveta Arkadyevna Vishetnevskaya's origins and how she came to be in the Tri-Cities changed on a weekly basis. I think she and her brood of grandchildren and great-grandchildren encouraged the more outrageous versions. All that I knew for certain was that she had been born in Moscow, Russia, and had lived in the Tri-Cities for at least 20 years. Elisaveta rose from the depths of the big car with all the drama of a prima ballerina taking her bow. The picture she made was worth all the drama. She was almost 6 feet tall and little more than skin and bones, with a long, elegant nose and gray, penetrating eyes. Her style of dress was somewhere between babushka and Baba Yaga. Layers of rich fabrics and textures came down to her calves, all covered with a long wool cape and a worn scarf that wrapped around her head and neck. Her outfit wasn't authentic, at least not to any period or place that I've heard of, but I've never seen anyone brave enough to tell her so. Elizaveta Arkadyevna, welcome, I said, walking past the bus to stand by her car. She scowled at me.
My Adamya calls and tells me you have one of his wolves dead.
Her voice had the crispness of a British aristocrat, so I knew she was angry. Her usual accent was thick enough I had to make a real effort to understand her. When she was really angry, she didn't speak English at all. Werewolf, yes, I agreed, but I don't think it is one of Adam's. Adamya, I had learned, was an affectionate form of Adam. I don't think she'd ever called him that to his face. Elisaveta was seldom affectionate to anyone likely to overhear her. I have the body in my shop, I told her, but there is blood all over here. The werewolf chased me with a torn artery and bled from here over to the storage facility, where he tore up the fence in two places before he bled to death out on the street. The storage facility has cameras, and I used Stefan's bus, I pointed to it, to move the body. She said something in Russian to her chauffeur, who I recognized as one of her grandchildren. He bowed and said something back before going around to open the trunk.
Go, she told me and flung her arms in a pushing gesture. I will take care of the mess out here without your help. You wait with the body. Adam will be here soon. Once he has seen, he will tell me what he would have me do with it. You killed this wolf? With a silver bullet so I should look for casing?
With my fangs, I told her. She knew what I was. It was sort of an accident, at least his death was. She caught my arm when I turned to go into the office.
What were you thinking, Mercedes Thompson? A little wolf who attacks the great ones will be dead soon, I think. Luck runs out eventually.
He would have killed a boy under my protection, I told her. I had no choice. She released me and snorted her disapproval, but when she spoke, her Russian accent was firmly in place.
There is always choice, Mercy, always choice. If he attacked a boy, then I suppose it must not have been one of Adamya's.
She looked at her chauffeur and barked out something more. Effectively dismissed, I went back to Mac and our dead werewolf. I found Mac crouched near the body, licking his fingers as if he might have touched the drying blood and was cleaning them off. Not a good sign. Somehow, I was pretty certain that if Mac were fully in control, he wouldn't be doing that. Mac, I said, strolling past him and over to the far side of the garage where we'd been sitting. He growled at me. Stop that, I said sharply, doing my best to keep the fear out of my voice. Control yourself and come over here. There are some things you should know before Adam gets here. I'd been avoiding a dominance contest because my instincts told me that Mac was a natural leader, a dominant who might very well eventually become an alpha in his own right, and I was a woman. Women's liberation hadn't made much headway in the world of werewolves. A mated female took her pack position from her mate, but unmated females were always lower than males unless the male was unusually submissive. This little fact had caused me no end of grief, growing up as I did in the middle of a werewolf pack. But without someone more dominant than he, Mac wouldn't be able to take control of his wolf yet. Adam wasn't there, so it was up to me. I stared at him in my best imitation of my foster father and raised an eyebrow. Mac, for heaven's sake, leave that poor dead man alone and come over here. He came slowly to his feet, menace clinging to him. Then he shook his head and rubbed his face, swaying a little.
That helped, he said. Can you do it again?
I tried my best. Mac, get over here right now! He staggered a little drunkenly over to me and sat at my feet. When Adam comes, I told him firmly, whatever you do, don't look him in the eyes for longer than a second or two. Some of this should be instinct, I hope. It isn't necessary to cower. Remember that you've done no wrong at all. Let me talk. What we want is for Adam to take you home with him.
I'm fine on my own, Mac objected, sounding almost like himself,
but he kept his head turned toward the body. No, you're not, I said firmly. If there wasn't a pack, you might survive, but if you run into one of Adam's wolves without being made known to the pack, they'll probably kill you. Also, the full moon is coming soon. Adam can help you get control of your beast before then.
I can control the monster? Asked Mac, stilling.
Absolutely, I told him. And it's not a monster, any more than a killer whale is a monster. Werewolves are hot-tempered and aggressive, but they aren't evil. I thought about the one who had sold him and corrected myself. At least not any more evil than any other person.
I don't even remember what the beast does, Mac said. How can I control it?
It's harder the first few times, I told him. A good alpha can get you through that. Once you have control, then you can go back to your old life if you want.
You have to be a little careful. Even in human form, you're going to have to deal with having a shorter temper and a lot more strength than you're used to. Adam can teach you.
I can't ever go back, he whispered.
Get control first, I told him. There are people who can help you with the rest. Don't give up.
You're not like me.
Nope, I agreed. I'm a walker. It's different from what you are. I was born this way.
I've never heard of a walker. Is that some sort of fae?
Close enough, I said. I don't get a lot of the neat things that you werewolves have. No super strength, no super healing, no pack.
No chance you might eat your friends, he suggested.
I couldn't tell if he was trying to be funny or if he was serious.
There are some benefits, I agreed. How did you find out so much about werewolves?
I opened my mouth to give him the short version, but decided the whole story might better serve to distract him from the dead body. My mother was a rodeo groupie, I began, sitting down beside him. She liked cowboys, any cowboy. She liked a Blackfoot bull rider named Joe Old Coyote from Browning, Montana, enough to get pregnant with me. She told me that he claimed to come from a long line of medicine men, but at the time she thought he was just trying to impress her. He died in a car accident 3 days after she met him. She was 17, and her parents tried to talk her into an abortion, but she would have none of it. Then they tried to get her to put me up for adoption, but she was determined to raise me herself. Until I was 3 months old, and she found a coyote pup in my crib.
What did she do?
She tried to find my father's family, I told him. She went to Browning and found several families there with that last name, but they claimed they'd never heard of Joe. He was certainly Native American. I made a gesture to encompass my appearance. I don't look pure blood. My features are too Anglo. But my skin looks tanned even in November, and my straight hair is as dark as my eyes. But otherwise, I don't know much about him.
Old Coyote, said Mac speculatively.
I smiled at him. Makes you think this shifting thing must have run in the family, doesn't it?
So, how was it that you were raised by werewolves?
My great-grandfather's uncle was a werewolf, I said. It was supposed to be a family secret, but it's hard to keep secrets from my mother. She just smiles at people and they tell her their life stories. Anyway, she found his phone number and called him.
Wow, said Mac. I never met any of my great-grandparents.
Me either, I said, then smiled. Just an uncle of theirs who was a werewolf. One of the benefits of being a werewolf is a long life. If you can control the wolf. But Adam could explain that part better than me. His gaze was drawn back to our dead friend.
Yes, well, I sighed. Stupidity will still get you killed.
My great-grandfather's uncle was smart enough to outlive his generation, but all those years didn't keep him from getting gutted by a moose he was out hunting one night. Anyway, I continued, he came to visit and knew as soon as he saw me what I was. That was before the Fae came out, and people were still trying to pretend that science had ruled out the possibility of magic. He convinced my mother that I'd be safer out in the hinterlands of Montana being raised by the Maroc's pack. They have their own town in the mountains where strangers seldom bother them. I was fostered with a family there who didn't have any children.
Your mother just gave you up?
My mother came out every summer, and they didn't make it easy on her either. Not overfond of humans, the Maroc, excepting their own spouses and children.
I thought the Maroc was the wolf who rules North America, said Mac.
Packs sometimes take their public name from their leader, I told him. So the Maroc's pack call themselves the Maroc. More often they find some geographical feature in their territory. Adam's wolves are the Columbia Basin pack. The only other pack in Washington is the Emerald pack in Seattle. Mac had another question, but I held up my hand for him to be quiet. I'd heard Adam's car pull up. Remember what I said about the Alpha, I told Mac, and stood up. He's a good man and you need him. Just sit there, keep your eyes down, let me talk and everything will be all right. The heavy garage door of Bay 1 groaned, then rang like a giant cymbal as it was forced all the way open faster than it usually moved. Adam Hauptmann stood in the open doorway, stillness cloaking his body. And for an instant, I saw him with just my eyes, as a human might. He was worth looking at. For all his German last name, his face and coloring were Slavic. dusky skin, dark hair, though not as dark as mine, wide cheekbones, and a narrow but sensual mouth. He wasn't tall or bulky, and a human might wonder why all eyes turned to him when he walked into a room. Then they'd see his face, and assume wrongly that it was the attraction. Adam was an alpha, and if he'd been ugly, he would have held the attention of anyone who happened to be nearby, wolf or human. But the masculine beauty he carried so unselfconsciously didn't hurt. Under more usual circumstances, his eyes were a rich chocolate brown, but they had lightened with his anger until they were almost yellow. I heard Mac gasp when the full effect of Adam's anger hit him, so I was prepared and let the wave of power wash off me like seawater on glass. Maybe I should have explained matters better when I had him on the phone. But where's the fun in that?
"What happened?" he asked, his voice softer than the first snowfall in winter.
"It's complicated," I said, holding his gaze for 2 full seconds before I turned my head and gestured toward the body. "The dead one is there. If he belongs to you, he is new, and you haven't been doing your job. He was as deaf and blind as a human. I was able to take him by surprise. Then he was too ignorant to realize that the wound wouldn't close as fast as usual if it was given by a preternatural creature. He let himself bleed out because he was too caught up in the chase to—"
"Enough, Mercedes," he growled as he strode over to the dead wolf man and knelt beside him.
He moved the body, and one of the corpse's arms flopped down limply on the ground. Mac whined eagerly, then bowed his head and pressed it against my thigh so that he couldn't see. The sound drew Adam's attention from the body to the boy at my feet. He growled.
"This one isn't one of mine, and neither is that."
"So gracious," I said. "Your mother should be complimented on your manners, Hauptmann."
"Careful,"
he whispered. It wasn't a threat. It was a warning. Okay, he was scary, really scary. He'd probably have been scary even when he was just a human, but it wouldn't do to let him know he intimidated me. "Adam Hauptmann," I said politely to show him how it was done, "allow me to introduce you to Mac. That's all of his name I know. He was attacked by a werewolf in Chicago about 2 moons ago. The werewolf killed his girlfriend, but he survived. He was taken by his attacker and put in a cage. A man who sounds a lot like the Chicago alpha, Leo, sold him to someone who held him inside a cage in a semi-trailer and used him for what sounds like some sort of drug experiments until he broke free. Last Friday, he showed up at my door looking for work."
"You didn't inform me that you had a strange wolf on your doorstep?"
I gave him a put-upon sigh. "I am not one of your pack members, Adam. I know this is difficult for you to fathom, so I'll speak slowly. I don't belong to you. I am under no obligation to tell you anything." Adam swore harshly.
"New werewolves are dangerous, woman, especially when they are cold and hungry."
He looked at Mac, and his voice changed completely, the heat and anger gone.
"Mercy, come here."
I didn't look down to see what he'd noticed in Mac's face. I took a step, but Mac was wrapped around my left leg. I stopped before I fell. I'm a little stuck for the moment."
"For a smart girl, you're pretty stupid sometimes," he said, his voice rich and gentle so as not to startle the werewolf by my side. "Locking yourself in a garage with a new wolf and a dead body isn't the smartest thing you could have done. I don't have a connection with him yet. It would help if you have his real name."
"Mac," I murmured, "what's your name?" "Alan," he said dreamily, coming up to his knees so his face was pressed against my belly. "Alan Mackenzie Fraser, after my grandfather who died the year I was born." The friction of his movement rucked my shirt up, and he licked my bare skin. To an outsider, it might have looked sensual, but the abdomen is a vulnerable spot on the body, a favorite of predators.
"You smell good," he whispered.
He smelled like werewolf, and I was starting to panic, which wasn't a very useful thing to do.
"Alan," said Adam, rolling the name on his tongue. "Alan Mackenzie Fraser, come here to me."
Mac jerked his head away from me but tightened his arms painfully on my hips. He looked at Adam and growled, a low rumble that caused his chest to vibrate against my leg.
Mine,
he said. Adam's eyes narrowed.
I don't think so. She is mine.
It would have been flattering, I thought, except that at least one of them was talking about dinner, and I wasn't certain about the other. While Adam had Mac distracted, I reached behind me and grabbed my big crowbar from the shelf directly behind us. I brought it down on Mac's collarbone. It was an awkward hit because I didn't have much leverage, but the collarbone, even on a werewolf, is not hard to damage. I heard the bone crack and wrenched myself out of Mac's grip and across the garage before he recovered from the unexpected pain. I didn't like hurting him, but he would heal in a few hours as long as I didn't let him eat me. I didn't think he was the kind of person who would recover from murder as easily as he would a broken bone. Adam had moved almost as quickly as I had. He grabbed Mac by the scruff of his neck and jerked him to his feet. Adam, I said from the relative safety of the far end of the garage, he's new and untaught. A victim. I kept my voice quiet so I didn't add to the excitement. It helped that Mac wasn't looking particularly dangerous at the moment. He hung limply in Adam's grip.
Sorry, he said almost inaudibly. Sorry.
Adam let out an exasperated huff of air and lowered Mac to the ground, on his feet at first, but when Mac's knees proved too limp to hold him up, Adam eased him all the way down.
Hurts, said Mac.
I know.
Adam didn't sound angry anymore. Of course, he was talking to Mac and not me.
If you change, it'll heal faster.
Mac blinked up at him. I don't think he knows how to do it on purpose, I offered. Adam slanted a thoughtful look at the body, then back at me.
You said something about a cage and experiments?
Mac didn't say anything, so I nodded. That's what he told me. Apparently someone has a drug that they are trying to get to work on werewolves. I told him what Mac had told me, then gave him the details of my own encounter with the dead werewolf and his human comrade. I'd already told Adam most of the salient facts, but I wasn't certain how much information made it through his anger, so I just told him all of it again.
"Damn it," said Adam succinctly when I'd finished. "Poor kid."
He turned back to Mac.
"All right. You're going to be fine. The first thing we're going to do is call your wolf out so that you can heal."
No,
Mac said, looking wildly at me, then at the dead wolf man.
I can't control myself when I'm like that. I'll hurt someone.
Look at me,
said Adam. And even though the dark, raspy voice hadn't been directed at me, I found myself unable to pull my eyes off him. Mac was riveted.
It's all right, Alan. I won't allow you to hurt Mercy, much as she deserves it. Nor,
Adam continued, proving that he was observant,
will I allow you to eat the dead.
When Mac hesitated, I walked back over and knelt beside Adam so I could look Mac in the eye. I told you, he can control your wolf until you can. That's why he's alpha. You can trust him. Mac stared at me, then closed his eyes and nodded.
All right, but I don't know how.
You'll get the hang of it, Adam said. But for right now, I'll help you.
His knee nudged me away as he got out his pocket knife.
This will be easier without your clothing.
I got up as unobtrusively as I could and tried not to flinch when Mac cried out. The change is not easy or painless at the best of times, and it was worse without the aid of the moon's call. I don't know why they can't change like I do, but I had to close my eyes against the pained sounds that came from the corner of my garage. Certainly the broken collarbone didn't make the shift any easier for Mac. Some werewolves can change relatively quickly with practice, but a new werewolf can take a lot of time. I slipped out of the garage through the office and walked out the door, both to give them some privacy and because I couldn't bear Mac's suffering anymore. I sat on the single cement step outside the office and waited. Elisabetta returned, leaning on her grandson's arm about the same time that Mac's scream turned into a wolf's cry.
"There is another werewolf?" Elisabetta asked me.
I nodded and got to my feet. "That boy I told you about," I said. "Adam's here, though, so it's safe. Did you clean Stefan's van?" I nodded at the bus.
Yes, yes. Did you think you were dealing with an amateur?
She gave an offended sniff.
Your vampire friend will never know that his van held a corpse other than his own.
Thank you. I tilted my head, but I couldn't hear anything from inside the garage, so I opened the office door and called, Adam?
It's all right, he said, sounding tired. It's safe.
Elisaveta is here with her chauffeur. I warned him in case he hadn't noticed them when he'd stormed in.
Have her come in, too.
I would have held open the door, but Elisaveta's grandson took it out of my hand and held it for both of us. Elisaveta shifted her bony grasp from his arm to mine, though from the strength of her grip, I was pretty certain that she didn't need help walking. Mac was curled up in the far corner of the garage where I'd left him. His wolf form was dark gray, blending in with the shadows on the cement floor. He had one white foot and a white stripe down his nose. Werewolves usually have markings that are more dog-like than wolf-like. I don't know why. Bran, the Marak, has a splash of white on his tail, as though he dipped it in a bucket of paint. I think it's cute, but I'd never had the nerve to tell him so. Adam was kneeling beside the dead man, paying no attention to Mac at all. He looked up when we came in from the office.
Elisaveta Arkadyevna, he said in a formal greeting,
then added something in Russian. Switching back to English, he continued.
Robert, thank you for coming tonight, too.
Elisaveta said something in Russian directed at Adam.
Not quite yet, Adam replied. Can you reverse his change?
He gestured to the dead man.
I don't recognize his scent, but I'd like to get a good look at his face.
Elisaveta frowned and spoke rapidly in Russian to her grandson. His response had her nodding, and they chatted for a few moments more before she turned back to Adam.
That might be possible. I can certainly try.
I don't suppose you have a camera here, Mercy? Adam asked.
I do, I told him. I work on old cars. Sometimes I work on cars that other people have restored in new and interesting fashions. I found that getting a picture of the cars before I work on them is useful in putting them back together again. I'll get it.
And bring a piece of paper and an ink stamp pad if you have it. I'll send his fingerprints off to a friend for identification.
By the time I returned, the corpse was back in human form, and the hole I'd torn in his neck gaped open like a popped balloon. His skin was blue with blood loss. I'd seen dead men before, but none that I was responsible for killing. The change had torn his clothing, and not in the interesting way that comic books and fantasy artists always depict it. The crotch of his pants was ripped open, along with his blood-soaked shirt's neck and shoulder seams. It seemed terribly undignified. Adam took the digital camera from me and snapped a few pictures from different angles, then tucked it back in its case and slung it over his shoulder.
I'll get it back to you as soon as I get these pictures off it, he promised absently as he took the paper and ink stamp and, rather expertly, rolled the limp fingers in ink, then on the sheet of paper.
Things moved rapidly after that. Adam helped Elisaveta's grandson deposit the body in the luxurious depths of the trunk of her car for disposal. Elisaveta did her mumbles and shakes that washed my garage in magic and, hopefully, left it clean of any evidence that I'd ever had a dead man inside. She took Mac's clothing, too.
Hush, said Adam when Mac growled an objection. They were little more than rags, anyway. I've clothes that should fit you at my house, and we'll pick up more tomorrow.
Mac gave him a look.
You're coming home with me, said Adam in a tone that brooks no argument. I'll not have a new werewolf running loose around my city. You come and learn a thing or two, then I'll let you stay or go as you choose, but not until I'm satisfied you can control yourself.
I am going now. It is not good for an old woman like me to be up this late, Elisaveta said.
She looked at me sourly.
Don't do anything stupid for a while if you can help it, Mercedes. I do not want to come back out here.
She sounded as if she came out to clean up my messes on a regular basis, though this was the first time. I was tired, and the sick feeling that killing a man had left in my stomach was still trying to bring up what little was left of my dinner. Her sharpness raised the hackles I was too on edge to pull down, so my response wasn't as diplomatic as it ought to have been. I wouldn't want that either, I said smoothly. She caught the implied insult, but I kept my eyes wide and limpid so she wouldn't know whether I meant it or not. Insulting witches is right up there on the stupid list with enraging alpha werewolves and cuddling with a new wolf next to a dead body, all of which I'd done tonight. I couldn't help it, though. Defiance was a habit I developed to preserve myself while growing up with a pack of dominant and largely male werewolves. Werewolves, like other predators, respect bravado. If you are too careful not to anger them, they'll see it as a weakness. And weak things are prey. Tomorrow I was going to repair old cars and keep my head down for a while. I'd used up all my luck tonight. Adam seemed to agree, because he took Elisabetta's hand and tucked it into the crook of his elbow, drawing her attention back to him as he escorted her back to her car. Her grandson Robert gave me a lazy grin.
"Don't push the babushka too hard, Mercy," he said softly. "She likes you, but that won't stop her if she feels you aren't showing her proper respect."
"I know," I said. "I'm going home to see if a few hours of sleep won't curb my tongue before it gets us into trouble." I meant to sound humorous, but it just came out tired. Robert gave me a sympathetic smile before he left. A heavy weight leaned against my hip, and I looked down to see Mac. He gave me what I imagined was a sympathetic look. Adam was still with Elisabetta, but Mac didn't seem to be having trouble. I scratched him lightly behind one pricked ear. "Come on," I told him. "Let's lock up." This time, I remembered to grab my purse. Chapter 4 Home at last, I decided that there was only one remedy for a night like this. My stash of dark chocolate was gone, and I'd eaten the last ginger snap, so I turned on the oven and pulled out the mixing bowl. By the time someone knocked at my door, I was pouring chocolate chips into the cookie dough. On my doorstep was a sprite of a girl with day-glow orange hair that sprang from her head in riotous curls, wearing enough eye makeup to supply a professional cheerleading squad for a month. In one hand, she held my camera.
"Hey, Mercy, Dad sent me over to give you this and to get me out of the way while he dealt with some pack business."
She rolled her eyes as she handed me the camera.
"He acts like I don't know enough to stay out of the way of strange werewolves."
"Hey, Jessie," I said and waved her inside.
"Besides," she continued as she came in and towed off her shoes, "this wolf was cute, with a little stripe here."
She ran her finger down her nose.
"He wasn't going to hurt me. I was just rubbing his belly and my father came in and had a cow. Oh, yum, cookie dough. Can I have some?"
Jessie was Adam's daughter, 15, going on 40. She spent most of the year with her mother in Eugene. She must be in town to spend Thanksgiving with Adam. It seemed a little early to me for that, since Thanksgiving wasn't until Thursday, but she went to some private school for brilliant and eccentric kids, so maybe her vacations were longer than the public schools. "Did you dye your hair especially for your father?" I asked, finding a spoon and handing it to her with a healthy glob of dough.
"Of course," she said, taking a bite, then continuing to talk as if her mouth weren't half full. "It makes him feel all fatherly if he can complain about something. Besides," she said with an air of righteousness, "everyone in Eugene is doing it. It'll wash out in a week or two. When I was tired of the lecture, I just told him he was lucky I didn't use super glue to put spikes in like my friend Jared. Maybe I'll do that next vacation. This is good stuff."
She started to put her spoon in the dough for another round, and I slapped her hand. "Not after it's been in your mouth," I told her. I gave her another spoon, finished mixing in the chips, and began dropping cookie dough on the pans.
"Oh, I almost forgot," she said after another bite. "My father sent the camera with a message. It was needlessly cryptic, but I knew you'd tell me what it meant. Are you ready?"
I put the first pan in the oven and started loading the next one. "Shoot."
"He said, 'Got a hit. Don't fret. He was a hired gun.'"
She waved her empty spoon at me.
"Now explain it to me."
I suppose I should have respected Adam's need to protect his daughter, but he was the one who sent her to me. "I killed a man tonight. Your father found out who he was."
"Really? And he was a hitman? Cool." She dropped the spoon in the sink next to the first one, then boosted herself up to sit on my counter and conducted a rapid question-and-answer session all by herself.
Was that what you called him about earlier? He was fit to be tied. How can you call Dad? No, wait. The man you killed was a werewolf, too, wasn't he? That's why Dad took off so fast. Who's the wolf he came back with?
She paused.
You killed a werewolf? Did you have a gun?
Several, but I hadn't brought one with me to the garage. She had paused, so I answered her last two questions. Yep, and nope.
Awesome,
she grinned.
Hey, how'd you do it?
It wasn't on purpose, I told her repressively. I might as well have tried holding back a tidal wave with my bare hands. It would have had as much effect.
Of course not, she said. Not unless you were really
I raised an eyebrow, and she changed the word without slowing down.
Ticked off. Did you have a knife, or was it a crowbar?
My teeth, I told her.
Ew!
She grimaced briefly.
Nasty. Oh, I see. You mean that you took them on while you were a coyote?
Most humans only know about the Fae, and there are still a lot of people who think that the Fae are just a hoax perpetrated by the government or on the government. Take your pick. Jessie, however, as the daughter of a werewolf, human though she was quite aware of the wild things, as she called them. Part of that was my fault. The first time I met her, shortly after the Alpha had moved his family next to my home, she'd asked me if I were a werewolf like her father. I told her what I was, and she nagged me until I showed her what it looked like when I took my other form. I think she was 9, and already a practiced steamroller. Yep. I was just trying to get his attention so he'd chase me and leave Mac. That's a striped werewolf, I imitated her finger-down-the-nose gesture. He is pretty nice, I told her. Then, feeling I had to play adult in fairness to her father, I said, but he's a newbie, and his control isn't terrific yet, so listen to your father about him, okay? If Mac bit you or hurt you, it would make him feel awful, and he's had a bad enough time of it already. I hesitated. It really wasn't my business, but I like Jessie. There are a few of your father's wolves that you really do need to stay away from. She nodded, but said confidently,
They won't hurt me, not with my father. But you mean Ben, don't you? Dad told me to stay out of his way. I met him yesterday when he stopped by.
She wrinkled her nose.
He's a snark, even if he has that cool British accent.
I wasn't certain what a snark was, but I was certain Ben qualified. We ate the cookies as they came out of the oven, and I gave her a loaded plate covered with tinfoil to take back with her. I went out to the porch with her and saw a sales lot of cars parked at Adam's house. He must have called in the pack. I'll walk you home, I said, slipping on the shoes I kept on the porch for when it was muddy. She rolled her eyes, but waited for me.
Really, Mercy, what do you do if one of the pack decides to bother us?
I can scream really loud, I said. That's if I don't decide to use my newly patented technique and kill him, too.
That's right, she said. But I'd stick to screaming. I don't think Dad would like it if he started killing his wolves.
Probably none of them would harm a hair of her head, just as she thought. I was almost sure she was right. But one of the cars I could see was Ben's red truck. I wouldn't leave a 15-year-old alone if Ben was around, no matter whose daughter she was. No one bothered us as we walked through my back field.
Nice car, she murmured as we passed the donor rabbit's corpse. Dad really appreciates you setting it out here for him. Good for you. I told him the next time he annoyed you, you were likely to paint graffiti on it.
Your father is a subtle man, I told her. I'm saving the graffiti for later. I decided that the next time he gets obnoxious, I'll take 3 tires off. I held my hand out and canted it, like a car with 1 wheel. She giggled.
It would drive him nuts. You should see him when the pictures aren't hanging straight on the walls.
We reached the back fence, and she climbed cautiously through the old barbed wire.
If you do decide to paint it, let me help.
Absolutely, I promised. I'll wait here until you're safely inside. She rolled her eyes again, but grinned and sprinted for her back porch. I waited until she waved to me once from Adam's back door and disappeared inside. When I took the garbage out before I went to bed, I noticed that Adam's place was still full of cars.
It was a long meeting then. Made me grateful I wasn't a werewolf. I turned to go into my house and stopped. I'd been stupid. It doesn't matter how good your senses are if you aren't paying attention. "Hello, Ben," I said to the man standing between me and the house.
"You've been telling tales, Mercedes Thompson," he said pleasantly.
As Jesse had said, he had a nifty English accent. He wasn't bad-looking either, if a trifle effeminate for my taste. "Hmm?" I said. He tossed his keys up in the air and caught them one-handed, once, twice, three times, without taking his eyes off mine. If I yelled, Adam would hear, but, as I told him earlier, I didn't belong to him. He was possessive enough, thank you. I didn't really believe Ben was stupid enough to do something to me, not with Adam within shouting distance.
"Stay here a moment, Ben," Ben said with an exaggeration of the drawl that Adam's voice still held from a childhood spent in the Deep South. "Wait until my daughter has had a chance to get to her room. Wouldn't want to expose her to the likes of you."
The last sentence lost Adam's tone and fell back into his own crisp British accent. He didn't sound quite like Prince Charles, but closer to that than to Fagin and Oliver. "I don't know what you think it has to do with me," I told him with a shrug. "You're the one who got kicked out of the London pack. If Adam hadn't taken you, you'd have been in real trouble."
"It wasn't me that done it," he growled ungrammatically.
I refrained from correcting him with an effort.
"And as for what you have to do with it, Adam told me you'd warned him to keep Jesse out of my way."
I didn't remember doing that, although I might have. I shrugged. Ben had come to town a few months ago in a flurry of gossip. There had been three particularly brutal rapes in his London neighborhood, and the police had been looking in his direction. Guilty or not, his alpha felt it would be good to get him out of the limelight and shipped him to Adam. The police hadn't anything to hold him on, but after he'd emigrated, the rapes stopped. I checked. The internet is an amazing thing. I remembered speaking to Adam about it, and I warned him to watch Ben around vulnerable women. I'd been thinking about Jesse, but I didn't think I'd said that explicitly. "You don't like women," I told him. "You are rude and abrasive. What do you expect him to do?"
"Go home, Ben," said a molasses deep voice from just behind my right shoulder. I needed to get more sleep, darn it, if I was letting everyone sneak up on me.
"Daryl," I said, glancing back at Adam's second. Daryl was a big man, well over 6 feet. His mother had been Chinese, Jesse had told me, and his father an African tribesman who had been getting an engineering degree at an American university when they met. Daryl's features were an arresting blend of the two cultures. He looked like someone who should have been modeling or starring in movies, but he was a PhD engineer working at the Pacific Northwest Laboratories in some sort of government hush-hush project. I didn't know him well, but he had that eminently respectable air that college professors sometimes have. I much preferred him at my back to Ben, but I wasn't happy being between two werewolves, whoever they were. I stepped sideways until I could see them both.
"Mercy?"
He nodded at me, but kept his eyes on Ben.
"Adam noticed you were missing and sent me to find you."
When Ben didn't respond, he said,
"Don't screw up. This is not the time."
Ben pursed his lips thoughtfully, then smiled, an expression that made a remarkable difference to his face. Only for an instant, he looked boyishly charming.
"No fuss, just telling a pretty lady good night. Good night, sweet Mercedes.
Dream of me." I opened my mouth to make a smart comment, but Daryl caught my eye and made a cut-off gesture with his hand. If I'd had a really good comeback, I'd have said it anyway. But I didn't, so I kept my mouth shut. Daryl waited until Ben started off before saying brusquely,
"Good night, Mercy. Lock your doors."
Then he strode off toward Adams. Between the dead wolf and Ben's wish, I suppose I should have had nightmares, but instead I slept deeply and without dreams, none I remembered anyway. I slept with the radio on, because otherwise, with my hearing, all I did was catnap all night. I tried earplugs, but that blocked sound a little too well for my peace of mind. So I turned music on low to block the normal sounds of night, and figured anything louder would wake me up.
Something woke me up that morning about an hour before the alarm, but though I turned down the music and listened, all I heard was a car with a well-muffled Chevy 350 driving away. I rolled over to go back to sleep, but Medea realized I was awake and began yowling at me to let her out. She wasn't particularly loud, but very persistent. I decided it had been long enough since Adam's note that letting her run wouldn't make him feel like I was deliberately defying him. It would also buy me some quiet so I could catch that last hour of sleep. Reluctantly, I got out of my warm bed and pulled on jeans and a t-shirt. Happy to have me up and moving, Medea stropped my shins and generally got in the way as I staggered blearily out of my room, across the living room to the front door. I yawned and turned the doorknob, but when I tried to open the door, it resisted. Something was holding it shut. With an exasperated sigh, I put my shoulder against the door and it moved a reluctant inch or so, far enough for me to catch a whiff of what lay on the other side. Death. Wide awake, I shut the door and locked it. I'd smelled something else, too, but I didn't want to admit it. I ran back to my room, shoved my feet in my shoes, and opened the gun safe. I grabbed a Sig 9mm and shoved a silver-loaded magazine in it, then tucked the gun into the top of my pants. It was cold, uncomfortable, and reassuring, but not reassuring enough. I'd never actually shot anything but targets. If I hunted, I did it on four paws. My foster father, a werewolf himself, had insisted I learn how to shoot and how to make the bullets. If this was werewolf business, and after the previous night I had to assume it was, I needed a bigger gun. I took down the .44 Marlin and loaded it for werewolf. It was a short rifle, and small, unless you took a good look at the size of the barrel. The lipstick-sized silver bullets were guaranteed, as my foster father used to say, to make even a werewolf sit up and take notice. Then he'd put a finger alongside his nose, smile, and say, "Or lie down and take notice, if you know what I mean." The Marlin had been his gun. The rifle was a comfortable, fortifying presence when I quietly opened my back door and stepped out into the pre-dawn night. The air was still and cold. I took a deep breath and smelled death, undeniable and final. As soon as I rounded the corner of the trailer, I could see the body on my front porch, blocking my front door. He was on his face, but my nose told me who it was, just as it had when I first opened the door. Whoever had dumped him had been very quiet, wakening me only as they drove off. There was no one else there now, just Mac and me. I climbed the four steps up to my porch and crouched in front of the boy. My breath fogged the air, but there was no mist rising from his face, no heartbeat. I rolled him onto his back, and his body was still warm to my touch. It had melted the frost off the porch where he had lain. He smelled of Adam's home, a fragrant mix of wood smoke and the pungent air freshener favored by Adam's housekeeper. I couldn't smell anything that would tell me who had killed Mac and left him as a warning. I sat on the frost-coated wood of the porch, set the rifle beside me, and touched his hair gently. I hadn't known him long enough for him to have a hold on my heart, but I had liked what I'd seen. The squealing of tires peeling out had me back on my feet with rifle in hand as a dark-colored SUV shot away from Adam's house like the fires of hell were behind it. In the dim, pre-dawn light, I couldn't tell what color it was, black or dark blue or even green. It might even have been the same vehicle that the villains had driven last night at the shop. Newer cars of a similar make all look alike to me. I don't know why it had taken me so long to realize that Mac dead on my front porch meant that something bad had happened at Adam's house. I abandoned the dead in hopes of being of use to the living, tearing across my backfield at a sprinter's pace, the rifle tucked under my arm. Adam's house was lit up like a Christmas tree. Unless he had company, it was usually dark. Werewolves, like walkers, do very well in the dark. When I came to the fence between our properties, I held the rifle away from my body and vaulted the barbed wire with a hand on top of the post. I'd been carrying the Marlin at quarter cock, but as soon as I landed on the other side of the fence, I pulled the hammer back. I would have gone through the back door if there had not been a tremendous crash from the front. I shifted my goal and made it around the side of the house in time to see the couch land half in and half out of the flower bed that lined the porch,
evidently thrown through the living room window and the porch rails. The werewolf I'd killed last night notwithstanding, werewolves are taught to be quiet when they fight. It's a matter of survival. Only with the broken window and the front door hanging wide open did I hear the snarls. I whispered the swear words I usually only bring out for rusty bolts and aftermarket parts that don't fit as advertised to give me courage as I ran. Dear Lord, I thought in a sincere prayer as I ran up the porch stairs, please don't let anything permanent have happened to Adam or Jesse. I hesitated just inside the door, my heart in my mouth and the marlin at the ready. I was panting from nerves as much as exertion, and the noise interfered with my hearing. Most of the destruction seemed to be concentrated in the high-ceilinged living room just off the entryway. The white Berber carpet would never be the same. One of the dining room chairs had been reduced to splinters against the wall, but the wall had suffered too. Broken plaster littered the floor. Most of the glass from the shattered window was spread outside on the porch. The glass on the carpet was from a mirror that had been jerked off the wall and slammed over someone's head. The werewolf was still there, a sizable chunk of mirror embedded in her spine. It wasn't a werewolf I knew, not one of Adam's, because there were only three females in Adam's pack, and I knew all of them. She was near enough to truly dead that she wasn't going to be a problem for a while, so I ignored her. I found a second werewolf under the fainting couch. I like to tease Adam about his fainting couch. How many women do you expect to faint in your living room, Adam? You'd have to buy a new one. The seat was broken, with splinters of wood sticking through the plush fabric. The second werewolf lay chest down on the floor. His head was twisted backward, and his death-clouded eyes stared accusingly at me. I stepped over a pair of handcuffs, the bracelets bent and broken. They weren't steel or aluminum, but some silver alloy. Either they were specifically made to restrain a werewolf, or they were a specialty item from a high-ticket BDSM shop. They must have been used on Adam. He'd never have brought a wolf he had to restrain into his house while Jesse was here. The noises of the fight were coming from around the corner of the living room toward the back of the house. I ran along the wall, glass crunching under my feet, and stopped just this side of the dining room as wood cracked and the floor vibrated. I put my head around the corner cautiously, but I needn't have worried. The fighting werewolves were too involved with each other to pay attention to me. Adam's dining room was large and open, with patio doors that looked out over a rose garden. The floors were oak parquet, the real stuff. His ex-wife had had a table that could seat 15 made to match the floor. That table was upside down and embedded in the far wall about 4 feet from the floor. The front of the matching china closet had been broken, as if someone had thrown something large and heavy into it. The result of the destruction was a fairly large, clear area for the werewolves to fight in. The first instant I saw them, all I could do was hold my breath at the speed and grace of their motion. For all their size, werewolves still resemble their gracile cousin, the timber wolf, more than a mastiff or St. Bernard, who are closer to their weight. When weres run, they move with a deadly, silent grace. But they aren't really built for running. They are built for fighting, and there is a deadly beauty to them that comes out only in battle. I'd only seen Adam's wolf form 4 or 5 times, but it was something you didn't forget. His body was a deep silver, almost blue, with an undercoat of lighter colors. Like a Siamese cat's, his muzzle, ears, tail, and legs deepened to black. The wolf he was fighting was bigger, a silvery buff color more common among coyotes than wolves. I didn't know him. At first, the size difference didn't bother me. You don't get to be the alpha without being able to fight. And Adam had been a warrior before he'd been changed. Then, I realized that all the blood on the floor was dripping from Adam's belly, and the white flash I saw on his side was a rib bone. I stepped out where I could get better aim and lifted the rifle, pointing the barrel at the strange werewolf, waiting until I could take a shot without risking hitting Adam. The buff-colored wolf seized Adam just behind the neck and shook him like a dog killing a snake. It was meant to break Adam's neck, but the other wolf's grip wasn't firm, and instead he threw Adam into the dining table, sending the whole mess crashing onto the floor and giving me the opportunity I'd been waiting for. I shot the wolf in the back of the head from less than 6 feet away, just as my foster father had taught me.
I shot him at a slight downward angle so that the Marlin's bullet didn't go through him and travel on to hit anyone else who happened to be standing in the wrong place for the next quarter mile or so. Marlin 444s were not built for home defense. They were built to kill grizzlies and have even been used a time or two to take out elephants. Just what the doctor ordered for werewolves. One shot at all but point blank, and he was dead. I walked up to him and shot him one more time, just to make sure. I'm not usually a violent person, but it felt good to pull the trigger. It soothed the building rage I'd felt ever since I'd knelt on my porch next to Mac's body. I glanced at Adam, lying in the midst of his dining table, but he didn't move, not even to open his eyes. His elegant muzzle was covered in gore. His silver hair was streaked dark with blood and matted, so it was hard to see the full extent of his wounds. What I could see was bad enough. Someone had done a fair job of gutting him. I could see pale intestines and the white of bone where the flesh had peeled away from his ribs. He might be alive, I told myself. My ears were still ringing. I was breathing too hard, my heart racing too fast and loud. It might be enough to cover the sound of his heart, of his breath. This was more damage than I'd ever seen a werewolf heal from. Far more than the other two dead wolves or the one I'd killed last night. I put the rifle back on quartercock and waded through the remains of the table to touch Adam's nose. I still couldn't tell if he was breathing. I needed help. I ran to the kitchen where, in true Adam fashion, he had a tidy list of names and numbers on the counter just below the wall phone. My finger found Daryl's